Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
Including Intuka trying to smash it into one
and
word.
And inform you in the afternoon.
Intuka puked on his pad.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, the ball's not going in the basket for either team on the road. Usually as a series goes along, it gets, you know, the home court advantage becomes less and less. But I just think, I don't know the answer. I wish there was a simple answer. The crowds are impactful.
That's Danny Ainge this morning on TNR trying to explain the home road thing. So grown men get impacted by people cheering or booing or an announcer. Again, your guy says Jaylen Brown for three. And the other guy says J.R. Swish. And grown ass men, professionals, are impacted by that. I mean, I don't want to believe that, but if Danny says it, what weak ass competitors the NBA has then?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah.
You've got to be kidding me.
I mean, the league is soft, and this sort of comes back to the whole great player thing. That you know, there are only really however many really great players in that league that can go win in a hostile environment, that are that good and that confident, and you know, and there aren't many of them.
I just don't know if that's it totally. I think there's just a give up factor, which again speaks to character of players in that league, but just the whole, there's seven games. So how many truly must games are there? And so if you're the road team in a seven-game series, you sit there and say, well, nothing really matters unless we lose games 3 and 4. So we'll just make sure we win games 3 and 4. And then you go to game 5, tied up at 2-2, and you say, well, if we get them at game 6, it's the same difference. So whatever. Okay, we're going to lose this one. Big deal. We get them in game 6. And then game 7, we'll throw everything out the window and, you know, maybe we'll really try. So maybe Cleveland comes back here on Sunday, and I'd like to think the dynamics on a Game 7 are different because you don't have that security blanket of the home game coming up the next game.
Sure, makes sense.
Where you know the other team's going to quit too because they're thinking the same thing. Like, that's what I think that it is. And it speaks, and so Danny doesn't want to go there. I don't know if he knows it or believes it, but it speaks to the competitive character of guys in that league, and it does not speak well. Does not speak well. Don't tell me it's the freaking crowd. I mean, that's even more depressing.
Okay, so let's see how this series goes, and maybe I'll believe you if Cleveland comes back here and wins Game 7. But something tells me LeBron already has tickets to the Caribbean. Like, LeBron is done, man.
And his farewell to Cleveland is Game 6 at home.
Yep. That's what I think. Yeah, to me, this has been a focus for LeBron because of how bad it went the last time. It was ugly last time, right? The burning of the jerseys and the whole nine yards, we all know. And he quit on the way out the door. He's not going to do that again.
Okay, so we have that, obviously, on the board. Celtics, Cavs. We got Red Sox from last night. We have a lot of Brady discussion this week that we'll get to, so we'll talk about whatever you want with your phones. Doug in Dover, lead us off on the Celts. Go ahead, Doug.
Hey, Felger, I got a point I want to make for you. Jaylen Brown, he's so quick at getting in to the paint, but every time a body comes out in front of him, he turns his back and passes the ball back out. I lost count at 10 times that happened in the first half last night. The guy, he's got to take it hard in there and either get a layup or get the foul. And, Maz, I have a point for you I want to make about the Red Sox. Shouldn't the catcher be one of the most clutch hitters on the team? I mean, they make a living watching the pitch. So,
hey, Doug, let me just type you there. First of all, Jaylen Brown needs to work on his handle and just his, you know, his moves, his repertoire. He doesn't, like, Jaylen Brown has a much better handle and can break guys down and take them off the dribble and cross you over and, like, all that stuff. Like, Tatum's got all that stuff already. If Jaylen Brown develops it, he's going to be a better player, in my opinion, because he's got more athleticism there.
Sure.
But there's a big if there. If he never develops that handle or never develops that range of moves, then he won't. You know, so Brown has a longer way to go. There's no question about it.
Yeah, he's more of a project. I think they knew that when they drafted him, right? But you can see that the potential is there because unlike a guy like Rondo, and we said this about it from the beginning, when he shot the ball, it looked right, right? It didn't always go in, but the mechanics are good. He's fluid.
Brown's mechanics are good.
Yes, they are good. Whereas a guy like Rondo would shoot and you go, oh my God.
Or Marcus Smart shoots.
Right,
just
forget
like,
it.
He'll never shoot.
No chance. But Tatum is polished.
Okay, caller, you know the catcher is typically not one of your best hitters, even though he should see all the pitches and recognize all the pitches. It just takes such a physical toll that usually the catcher is one of your worst hitting positions, and you have to accept that. To a point, if your catcher has an OPS of 474, which is what I think Vasquez is, 470, you can't, at some point, you just can't have that in the lineup.
No, it's an automatic out. It is. It's an automatic out. And again, you're talking OPS.
His batting average is 195.
And so, like, he's getting on base, like, what? Less than one out of four times?
250 something.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's a joke.
His on base is 238.
I mean, that's horrendous. It is. It's horrendous. And then beyond that, see, what I thought he was going to say is, shouldn't your catcher be one of your smartest players? And
yes.
My answer to that is yes.
Right. Like, so if anyone should be waving someone down to slide or not, or paying attention, it's him. Good point.
And he shouldn't be the guy that's grabbing the ball with his face mask and giving up free bases. I'm telling you, I feel like this guy's mentally on La La Land this year. I don't know what the hell his problem is, but they feel to me like a dumb team at times. And it's starting to bug the crap out of me.
Jeff in the car on the NBA. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, guys, I think this product today is absolutely horrendous. I think the only people that think today's NBA is better than it was 30 years ago are the ones that didn't live back then to see the game. And one thing I'd like to say, Matt said this a few weeks ago, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the greatest NBA player of all time.
Okay, we'll do that for a different day. The NBA product, I'd like to make a point. I think the NBA in the regular season is better than it was when we were kids and maybe better than it's ever been. I am really disappointed in the playoff product. I think it's a playoff problem. I think the regular season of the NBA, if you've got the NBA package, whatever they call that thing, and you zip around, like, I think there are compelling players, and I think that the three-point line has opened up the game. It's not this defensive muck and grind thing, and it's not just about your center. When we were kids, do you have a center or do you not have a center? And like that used to be it. Like, you had to get a center. I think the game, from an aesthetic standpoint, in the regular season, when you flip around and watch NBA, maybe has never been better. I am really disappointed by the playoffs. Really. There's just not enough road teams that win. There are no upsets virtually. It doesn't feel like anyone fights through any adversity. They just wait to get home and win those games. And that is totally different than when we were kids and in the 80s, where Philadelphia could come in here and beat you in a Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, or the Lakers could come out here and beat you and stare you down, and Magic and Kareem could win those big games. And in the playoffs, it was more competitive. The league's better than it was then, I think. But the playoffs, so maybe it's about a character thing. This is a character assessment of the guys that play the league. The playoffs have been really disappointing to me.
I mean, because again, you know, this is a little bit more of the AAU era than, or maybe a lot more than it was when we were growing up. So a lot of these guys have just steamrolled their way along. LeBron's sort of the poster child for it. You know, he dominates, and then gets to the highest level and loses.
But there are so many good special players in the league, like way more than we were kids. Like, now you could have that package and flip on New Orleans. Like, who cares? But Anthony Davis is spectacular to watch.
Yeah, there's a wow factor throughout the league.
You
there's
flip
real star
on the
power.
Bucks and watch Giannis and be like, wow, you know, like.
And there are more coming in.
And yeah. there's like teams have got these guys are just amazing, and so I think the product is good to watch, like in that regard. But these back-and-forth playoff... What back-and-forth playoff series? It's just guys giving up every other night in the playoffs. Like, that's a problem to me. That's a problem. These games have not been compelling. Kevin at UMass has a thought on Tom Brady. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, so what is Brady trying to gain from all this? Is he just trying to send a message to Bill, or if he wants something, like be a Guerrero in the locker room or work on his contract? And what's stopping him from holding out during mandatory...
What's he doing? What's Brady doing? I think he's trying to stick it to Bill, one. I think he's legitimately putting some family time in because of those three things combined.
Maybe Guerrero privileges?
Yeah, right. Well, like, so he's sticking it to Bill because of contracting Guerrero and all those other things. I think he is getting pressure to spend more time with the family, and combine that, he's with the Prince of Morocco in Morocco or wherever the hell he is. Where is he?
Yeah, he's going to Morocco this weekend.
Morocco with the prince.
Is that a family trip?
Instead of, I don't know.
I don't buy the family excuse.
All I know, he's with the family. Monaco.
Monaco, that's what it is. Monaco, that's what it is. There apparently there's a big F1 race there, or whatever that is, you know, one of those. So
a car race.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's...
More like an FU race, Murray.
Right, that's what this is. It's an FU race. There's quarterbacks working with receivers, balls are out, football's going on at Gillette. There is, once again, a Super Bowl contender. These practices are important, and he's with the Prince of Monaco at an auto race in
Monaco.
Like...
He's with the Prince of Monaco in Monaco.
Why is he doing it? You know, at this point, we can tell why he's doing it. The fact that he is doing it is borderline disgusting to me.
See, to me, it's this simple. Like, again, this is why I dismiss the family part of it. It used to be that he planned his personal life around football. Now he plans the football around his personal life. And his, you know, his business interests and everything else. The whole thing is ass backwards. I just, the idea that anyone wants to tell me that Brady's the same guy, he's not.
Okay, we continue with your thoughts. I want to get to LeBron's fatigue. The LeBron fatigue. Are we being set up? Is this just another fake drama NBA setup? We discuss right after this.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass.
I love it.
You were right, Mass.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
A fatigued LeBron James. A worn out LeBron James. Like we haven't seen him in the past. Mouthpiece out. Mouth open. Knees buckled. Towel wiping. Tissue wiping. Frustrated. Bad pass. That's an all-time great passer. That's a bad pass. That's a drop-off to Jeff Green. LeBron James has been worn out, and give credit to the Celtics and the multiple bodies that they put on him.
Oh, my God, the LeBron fatigue thing. It's so NBA. I'm sorry, it is. It is so NBA, setting up the drama of the return. Oh, God. They all want their Willis Reed moment, and they have no idea who Willis Reed is. None. They don't know Willis Reed from Willis from Different Strokes. They don't know.
Willis Drummond.
They don't. But they all want that moment to set up the drama. And don't you feel that's what LeBron was doing last night?
Totally.
I mean, he should be tired. I mean, look, he's 33 years old. He's played a million minutes. He's averaged 40 minutes a night in the playoff. Like, he should be tired. I get it. But... Oh, it was just so obvious. And inside of 5 minutes? Like, do you hear the breathless... How about the breathless Doris Burke report? So, I mean, again, ESPN made sure you knew every 2 minutes that he was fatigued.
Let's send it over to Doris.
Well, Mike, as you know, the broadcasters that are around the local teams are very familiar with habits of players. And I asked Allie Clifton, who happens to be the sideline reporter for the Cleveland Cavaliers... Did she think, like Mark and Jeff, that LeBron looks tired? She said, it's a point of pride for LeBron James not to show any kind of fatigue, hands on his waist, bending over, all of which we have seen to the point, Mike, that she believes he's tired as well. So the guys are on point.
Yes, we can confirm he's tired. But that detail there. So she goes and asks a local beat, the sideline reporter for the Cavs, and is told that LeBron... doesn't like to grab his shorts, you know, when he's bending. You know, I mean, just what you said.
Right, hands on hips.
He doesn't like to show obvious signs of fatigue. It's a point of pride, so he doesn't do any of that. But here, get Tim Legler. Billy. Tim Legler in the postgame with Scott Van Pelt notices something immediately. Go ahead, Billy.
I made a note 5 minutes into the game. It's one of the first notes I wrote down tonight was, why is LeBron grabbing his shorts and bending over on a free throw attempt 5-6 minutes into the game? It just didn't look right. They're going to feed off of this guy's energy level. Sure. He's been sensational, obviously. What he has done in the postseason is almost superhuman. But tonight, for whatever reason, he just didn't have it. His biorhythms were not working for him tonight.
The biorhythms.
That's ridiculous.
But anyway, so the Cleveland people say he doesn't even grab his shorts because he doesn't want to show people he's tired. Yet 5 minutes into the game, when he has no reason to be tired, 5 minutes into the game, he's at the free throw line like, set up. I smell a setup.
See, that's how I feel. I think I just don't think it's necessarily, you know, solely about one game. I think it's about the bigger picture.
Yes, of course.
He's constructing a narrative here.
He's constructing a narrative.
Yeah, that's right. because he is that contrived.
And I generally like him, but this kind of stuff, like, come on.
Dude. Oh, yeah.
Like,
he's
you're
out
laying
of,
it on way too thick.
Oh, yeah. He's out of Cleveland, and he's got to make sure he gives these people a little going-away gift, because last time it got ugly. And he does, you know, he is from there. So he's making sure that this time there's a proper narrative when he bolts.
Okay, so what did Windhorst have to say there, Billy? Let's hear from Brian Windhorst.
The Cavs locker room after Game 5 was as quiet as it's been all season, and that's because they knew they missed a huge opportunity in this one. Holding the Celtics to just 36% shooting, having an opportunity to win on this floor, and not being able to execute enough to get it done. LeBron James was a little bit low energy, and he admitted he had moments where he felt tired, but he got no support from most of his teammates, especially the starters. Ty Lue admitted he lost track of his rotation and forgot to play Kyle Korver enough. All in all, not the type of performance from the Cavs that they were looking for.
All right, we'll get to Ty Lue.
Yeah, so the fatigue that might be real, he's tired of the bums he's surrounded with. The starters combined for 24 points last night. He ended up with 24 himself. The starters combined for 24. He's tired of being surrounded by bums, and he's tired of this dopey coach. I know we'll get to that later. That's what he's tired of. The fatigue, like, yeah, he's played a ton of minutes this year, but please, this is an act.
Well, I think Paul Pierce agrees with you in terms of mental fatigue. What did Paul Pierce say?
Well, I didn't see the defensive energy I saw he put forth in Game 4, where he was giving you blocks and steals and getting out in the open court finishing layups. It just looks like he's mentally tired. He's tired of seeing his supporting cast not show up for him. You know, that can wear on you over time when you're just constantly knowing you have to go out there and score 40 points, get 12 assists in order for your team to have a win. It just seems like it's getting to him mentally, and the Celtics are wearing him down because they have so many weapons, so many different guys who can play well, and I think it looks like it was getting to him.
No, Pierce would know. I mean, you know, he had to do that here for a long time and wore him out, so he would know. There's no question he doesn't have faith in his teammates. How could he? I mean, how could he? But I still think it's LeBron being about LeBron. As much as if this were LeBron and he was signed to a 5-year contract, and, you know, he had a little more belief in his team, he wouldn't look like he looked last night. He's ready to split town, man. The Caloosahatchee or whatever it is, the river that was burning, he's making sure it's not burning the next time he leaves town.
Okay, but not Game 6.
No. He's showing up for that
one. I feel like, again, the huffing and puffing a couple minutes into the game, when he's obviously is not tired at that point, it's all this long setup. It's just a setup for his dramatic moment, game-saving moment in Game 6.
Right, because then he's going to leave town. So he wants
hero. He's going to fight through the adversity, fight through the fatigue, fight through having to carry these gutless bums, you know, through the entire season. He's going to do this for you, Cleveland.
What a Herculean effort that we've seen here in Game 6 for LeBron to dig deep after we saw him out of breath, holding on to his shorts in Game 5. Just an unbelievable effort by LeBron tonight.
Exactly right. He's setting up the narrative.
Yep, he's going to give Cleveland a nice little kiss on the cheek and then say, see you later, I'm going to Philly.
And then when they talk to him after the game, you know, so LeBron, where'd you find the energy and the strength? You know, just out there grinding, man. That's all.
Just trying to do it for the land.
Yeah.
What did LeBron say himself, Billy Lane? Let's hear from LeBron.
I have my moments, but I think everybody at this point is tired. Worn down or whatever the case may be, but you know, still trying to make plays to help our team win, put us in position to win. And we had moments, we had an opportunity, but we didn't make enough plays.
Were you into the weather at all in this game?
No, I'm fine. And I didn't mention the fatigue either. Well, one of you guys did. I'm fine.
Yeah, I didn't mention the fatigue. I just made sure to grab my shorts 5 minutes into the game when I wasn't tired to let you all know that I'm tired.
And he just said a second before it, well, you know, we're all a little tired. But you're saying you're not tired. So which one is it? Oh, God, please. He's such a prima donna. He always has been.
See, the thing is, I can see he should be tired. I would expect him to be tired. And I'm okay with, when you get into the second half, for him to show that. Like, got it. But the stuff 5 minutes into the game, explain that to me.
No, they threw the ball up, and he went, man, this game's a grind.
So that's what it is, too much. That's what, and again, so I just keep doing this thing to you. Like, I don't know. I felt in the 80s the drama was more real. Like, someone won, so someone had to come back and show it the next game. It wasn't all sort of choreographed or one team giving up or giving in one game just to come home and sort of prove everybody wrong and, like, flip the switch. It's like it was more just sort of organic back and forths. These, I feel like, are contrived, set up back and forths. Especially with this guy.
Oh, no, no. This guy's the king of it.
Especially with this guy.
He is, totally. And look, I also think that the Eastern Conference contributes to this because the competition is just so bad overall that, you know, they extend the series and there are no storylines. If LeBron had another player on his team, they'd blister everybody in the conference and see you later, like when he had Kyrie.
Okay, so we've got still some Brady stuff on the board. We've got some Red Sox stuff on the board. Celts, Cavs all day long. We'll give you a quick hockey minute. Maybe it'll even be 30 seconds when we come back. And then right to your phones, I promise, first. Hear an update from Jim Murray.
Every afternoon, Felger and Maz bring you the science of sports.
Stupid me.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, this is it. With 7.3 seconds to go, the pain and anguish that so many of us have felt over the last 20 years and throughout the Ovechkin era. The puck drops. Beagle winning the draw. Back out to center. And that is going to do it. Good morning. Good afternoon. And good night, Tampa Bay. The Washington Capitals are the 2017-2018 Eastern Conference champions.
Oh, what a celebration. You can see those guys down there now jumping around. Unbelievable how happy they are. The coaches, everybody, the trainers, everybody's getting into it. It's so exciting. It's such a relief that they finally get there. It's going to be a huge week in Vegas, but the Capitals enjoy this. They have a few days. Enjoy it. I'm sure everybody back home's having a good time right now.
Viva Las Vegas! The Capitals are going to T-Mobile Arena Monday night. Game one of the Stanley Cup Final. This improbable run, this magical spring, lives on into the month of June. Unbelievable.
Capitals Radio Network, in case you were wondering. That one was so good, Sean Grandy even got out some note cards. Like, whoa, can learn something there. This magical season, they were like a two seed.
This magical spring.
They were the one or two seed or something. Like,
this magical season.
Well, they were once again the favorite. What's better for hockey? The Vegas Knights winning the Stanley Cup or Alex Ovechkin winning the Stanley Cup?
I say Ovechkin.
Ovechkin.
Vegas Golden Knights.
Ovechkin.
I just think, look, here's what I like about Ovechkin. I was telling you some of this off the air. You remember a couple of years ago, and I was just looking it up again, he scored like 50 goals or whatever the hell, and he was a minus 35.
Right.
He scored 51 goals and was a minus 35. That was the 13-14 season. You would think that that is mathematically impossible, for crying out loud, that since then, combined over the 4 years, plus 40. Now, look, his plus minus is always going to be a little bit lower because he scores so many damn goals on the power play.
He's never been better. As a two-way complete player and a competitor and someone who steps up in big games, he's never been better.
So that makes me want to root for him. Because I look at that and I say, there's a guy who recognized, boy, I haven't done enough. I haven't done enough, and so I got to play a more complete game.
If you're a casual fan or not really a hockey fan, you would say the expansion team is more interesting to you. If you're a hockey fan and have followed the league, you're a fan of the league, Alex Ovechkin, after how many failures and how many choke jobs, one of the most important players in the league over the last decade. You know, it's him and Crosby and Stamkos and I don't know who out. Like, you're talking about the most important, highly decorated superstars in that league over the last decade. He's on a short list of three guys to lose and lose and lose and then finally break through and win. That's a more important story for the league. It's a better story for the league. I'm rooting for him. Every dog has his day, Murray.
See, I hate that narrative, every dog has its day. No, I strongly believe that loser franchises have to remain loser franchises, and the Capitals are one of those franchises in sports. I don't want them breaking through. It's funnier when some of the all-time greats never achieve what they want so desperately. Oh, I take to my grave knowing Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl. Get there, what, your second year in the league, and then you never get there again. You take your stats, you bum. That's why it kills me that actually Peyton Manning won a couple, that John Elway ended up with a couple. Like, I hate that. Ovechkin, screw. And I know too many of my friends that are Capitals fans, and I want to taste their tears. Go Knights.
So either way, it's compelling from that standpoint. Either one of the all-time greats, or one of the greats of this generation, who is, you know, right now has a label of being one of the biggest playoff disappointments. Either he breaks through, and that's a big story, or an expansion team wins the Stanley Cup, which is freaking
I mean, the league really can't. Though. The league really can't lose.
Did they dodge a bullet?
And they got two American teams in it
with followings, and as opposed to Winnipeg, Tampa.
Woo!
Did NBC just dodge a bullet?
Big time. Like I don't know. For a veteran guy at that stage of his career who scored all those, he's got over 600 goals.
Good story.
It is a good story. Like I thought 3 years ago when he put up that minus 35, I thought, what a bum.
Well, and it's not just, and he ain't a sidecar. Like, he's right in the middle of it, and he's playing in both ends, and he's scoring clutch goal. He scored the first goal last night, right?
A minute into play.
Like, so he's not just along for the ride. So it's a good story either way. So I'm looking forward to that final.
It strikes me that he's learned what it takes to win. Like, to me, that's what the story is. A guy with all that talent has figured out, no, it takes more than that to win. Like, there's a good story there.
Okay, back to your phones on everything. There you go. There's your Hockey Minute. Edward in Cambridge. Hi, Ed. Edward!
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air. Please go.
Yes, you're factually challenged about Jaylen Brown. His wingspan isn't any better than Jason Tatum's. Your perception on their relative quality is off as well. Nobody agrees with you about this. I don't know what it is you think you see at all. Jaylen Brown's handle is poor. It's not going to
You don't think Jaylen Brown's more athletic, Edward?
Okay, great. I'm glad you brought up the athleticism. Vastly overrated in basketball players. I'll give you a couple of examples.
Okay, but no, hold on. I mean, maybe so. It might be overrated, but you will acknowledge that Jaylen Brown's more athletic.
I will absolutely concede that he is more of an athlete in terms of he sprints up and down the floor with like a gazelle. He's probably stronger. He looks better.
He jumps higher.
You know, a body.
He can play more. He's more above the rim.
Yeah. Yes, and that's also overrated. And we've seen that so many times with basketball players. Larry Bird is a great example of that. Larry Bird never got above the rim except maybe four times his entire career.
Yes, it was a big deal when Larry dunked, wasn't it? I mean, I agree. Look, I'm not going to dispute that. If you want to say athleticism's overrated and playing above the rim is overrated, then you don't think Jaylen Brown is a chance to be a very special player. That's fine. I think he does. I think if you add that to an some range and a shot from the outside, that he's a chance to be a more dynamic player, has a chance to be, than Tatum. Tatum is ahead of him right now, considerably. Offensively, obviously.
See, I think Tatum's actually stronger. That's one area where if I'm Brown, I'd put some emphasis on that.
And does Brown not have a bigger wingspan than Tatum?
I don't know.
Because it sure feels that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, Tatum's got sneaky long arms, though, too, when you really look at it. But even so, like, I haven't actually looked it up.
I mean, it feels to me like Brown's longer than Tatum.
To me, they're comparable, because I think Tatum's a little taller, but whatever. Like, I just look at it as Brown's a better athlete. I don't even think that that's all that debatable. Like, I look at that, and I think that part's pretty clear.
So if there's a better athlete who can shoot from the outside the same as the other guy, he would have a chance to be a better player. It's very simple.
Yeah, Billy said they have the same wingspan. He looked it up. So, but whatever. Like, Brown's got to get stronger. If he's going into the paint and Kyle Korver's shoving the ball down his throat.
Oh, ridiculous.
So that's bad. Like, that he can fix. He can work on that. The other one that I watch with him sometimes, I don't feel like he has the game sense that Tatum does. Tatum feels to me like he's got a real sort of knack, an instinct for the flow of the game. Brown sometimes, to me, feels out of it.
Yeah. No, Brown's raw. More raw than Tatum. Much more. No question.
So, but that one, I don't know if that'll come. Like, that one to me is to keep an eye on.
Richie in Brockton has a Red Sox thought in that base running mishap again last night on the inside the park home run. Richie, go ahead.
I just want to expand upon what Tony said about the personalities and the intellect of Red Sox players. Does Benintendi, Betts, and Bogaerts, do they know Mike Trout got hurt for 6 weeks last season, sliding head first? I watch these games night after night. That's all they do. I don't know if they know how to slide. I want you to ask Cora, do they know how to slide feet first? They're subjecting themselves to finger, hand, and wrist injuries. I'm waiting for one of them to get hurt.
Okay, let me write that down. Ask Cora.
But that's not a Red Sox thing. Everyone goes head first.
To me, I thought it was going to be about the quality of the base running. And I actually think Betts is a good base runner. Betts is, he's got good instincts on the bases, man. And aside from being fast, he recognizes when he can take an extra base. Betts is good. Even if he gets thrown out, my opinion on him is not going to change. Bogaerts makes too many mistakes. Betts, as a base runner is a more. I mean, bet attendee as a base runner is a moron. He's a moron on the bases. He's one of the dumbest base runners I've ever seen. So for a guy who's picked seventh and has, you know, some clear baseball ability and instinct as a base runner, he is a moron on the bases.
On that note, we give you our next segment, which is there is at least one analyst out there who does not believe LeBron is fatigued. He believes the Celtics made him look that way. I'll give you that analysis right after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
This is Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I was going to ask you, are we seeing age, father time, catch up with no. LeBron? A little decline in LeBron at all?
I don't think he wants to challenge Baines at the rim. Okay. You know, Baines led the NBA in defensive rating for a reason. I think his rule of verticality when the guy goes straight up and down is special. Like that, for him, that's what he does. So I don't think LeBron wants to challenge that night in and night right. out. Or he wants to challenge that and get that restricted and have to finish over a guy like Baines. So when he's in there, he's looking to pass.
God bless you, NBC Sports Boston. Don't ever change. So it's not LeBron. It was the presence of Aaron Baines and his principle of verticality. What did he call that? Billy, would you just please re-rack that again? This thing about his verticality? What does he do with the... Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, are we seeing age, father time, catch up with no. LeBron? A little decline in LeBron at all?
I don't think he wants to challenge Baines at the rim. You know, Baines led the NBA in defensive rating for a reason. I think his rule of verticality when the guy goes straight up and down.
Thank you. It's the rule of verticality.
What the hell does that even mean?
The rule of verticality. No, he's very good at going straight up and not fouling. He just goes straight up in his vertical zone.
Rule of verticality when
it's,
the guy goes.
It's the rule of verticality.
Yeah, you know who was good at that? You remember Roy Hibbert with the Pacers? He used to do it too.
Just stand in one spot like this.
You're allowed to put your arm straight up and jump straight up in the air and it's not a foul.
Rule of verticality.
It doesn't feel like it would be that hard of a skill set to attain, to be huge, put your hands up and then just go like this. Just a straight jump. But apparently that's a hard skill in the NBA.
It is, yeah.
So his rule of verticality is elite.
Rule of verticality when
he has an elite rule of verticality.
And of course, he's a large man, so that helps too.
So what it basically means, he can jump straight.
Yeah, a big guy put his arms up.
And can jump straight in a straight line.
Yeah. And he's, you know, for an NBA player, he's what qualifies as fat. I mean, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He's not fat, but you know what I mean.
So
beefy.
Beefy, better.
Do we give Steven some credit for that adjustment?
Yeah, a little bit, sure.
I'd give him more if it worked on the road. So let me see that thing work in Cleveland, and then I'll say that's a legit adjustment, as opposed to these gutless softies on both teams just playing better when their own cheerleaders are in the building. Like, that to me feels to be the defining characteristic of the series. Who's cheering for who? It's just unbelievable. So let me see those adjustments work on the road, and then I'll give you some credit for them. How's that?
So my only question is this, and I'm not, you know, look, I think the whole softness of both sides is apparent. But if you are Stevens and you want to make an adjustment, are you better off doing it in the home games? Because
excellent point.
So, like, you know, do you sort of say, well, I'll take every advantage I can get on the home floor because we're more likely to win that one and we have home court. So why waste it on the road? I say waste it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, maybe I'm better off doing it at home and we go seven and we win in seven. Like, it's going to be a long series and I have to live with that. I don't know. I'm asking.
It's a good point.
I'm asking.
All right, to the phones. Joe and Haverhill. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Mike, a couple of thoughts. Tony was hitting on the interest from the fans as far as the Celts Cavs go home and home. My thought was, if Kyrie was injected into this series, I think it would be totally different. You'd get that subplot with him with Cleveland. You'd get a superstar injected here. And my second point is, Dan Majerle, you never see guys like this anymore. He really played his heart out, and you just don't see guys
Dan
like
Majerle.
That
why,
Thunder Dan.
Why are you giving me Dan Majerle, Joe? Of all the people you could go to back in the day, you give me Dan Majerle? Huh. Interesting by you. The what was his first point? Would Irving have changed anything? I don't know. Because I see this in all these series now, where teams are just saying, well, we got him at home. So, you know, this one's lost. Screw it. We'll see him at home. And I see that whether the superstars on the floor, there's not superstars on the floor. Now, that's what made that Houston result so amazing the other night. So amazing. And from the team that I least expected it from.
I know, me too, yeah.
Right? So good. Like, that reaffirmed my you know, just like gave me some hope. God bless. But
I think the entertainment value would be higher.
You'd be so much better with Kyrie. Maybe.
And I think it would force LeBron to step his game up, too.
Yeah, probably. Good point, Murray.
Because he ain't going down to the guy that he doesn't like and vice versa. Like, I think you'd see more of like a back and forth.
Yeah, do you think he's having mental fatigue if Kyrie's on the floor?
No.
Because he'd want to
hands
beat
on his hips. Like, yeah, oh, God. Oh, it's been so arduous.
Five minutes in.
Oh, man, it's just too much.
No, the fact is that the series is sucking the life out of everyone because of the way it's been. I really do. I think this has been a horrid series to watch. So, look, and I'm not telling you the ratings have been bad. The ratings have been good, all of that. And I get the Celtics are a fabulous story. But the actual entertainment value of the games, dog crap.
Robert in Ann Arbor on the Celts. Hi, Robert.
Hey, I just want to talk about Marcus Smart. So the Celtics won by 13 last night, and Marcus Smart, I think, was a plus 25. Huh. And it's getting to the point where every time he walks on the floor, I'm excited, but not for what he's going to do, just because I know the Celtics are going to go on a 10-2 run just because his plus-minus has to get up high somehow. And the best way I've heard it described is that he's really bad at playing good basketball, but he's the best player on the floor playing awful basketball.
That makes
sense.
Just
want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, he's just value add to the team. You can't quantify it, and the plus and minus numbers are just striking.
He was a plus 10 last night, not a plus 25.
Oh, okay. Either way.
But it is the kind of player he is.
Yes.
So, like, when the caller talked about, you know, Dan Majerle, why not mention Marcus Smart? Like, look, he might doesn't make the shots, but in terms of the effort, Smart pretty much gives you the effort in every game. I mean, I don't remember many nights looking at Smart and going, oh, he's dogging it tonight.
Oh, God, almost never.
I mean, he was fat last year and out of shape, but in terms of the effort, he gives you the effort every night.
Jules in New Hampshire has a Brady thought. Hi, Jules.
What's up, Mike?
Hi, Jules.
Hey, it's kind of like you want to make Brady into Cromartie. You want him to have 13 kids and not know any of his names. The man's been in the league 19 years, twice as long as anybody else almost. And so, you know, you don't get that time back with your kids.
So you're saying anyone on the team, so anyone on the team who has kids is allowed to miss all this stuff in the offseason?
For one, he's the GOAT. But two, he's given up twice as much as anybody else already. You know what I'm saying? He's already done. He already paid his dues.
How about Drew Brees? How long has he been in the league?
Drew Brees? Mike just told me like a few months ago, Drew Brees got nothing that Andrew Luck is better than Drew Brees. So I don't even know.
But that's not what you're
talking. Tom Brady.
No, but that's not what you're talking about. You just said he's been in the league 19 years. That's twice as long as everybody else. So he's given up a lot more. Brees has been in the league 17 years. He hasn't given up.
What is Brees' wife? I don't know.
What does Brees' wife look like? He said as his phone breaks up. So if you got a hot wife, you're allowed to miss.
Kinda.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, the guy's consistent.
Let's look her up.
Yeah, no, I you know, so.
Let's look her up, Murray. Excellent point.
I like the way you think, Murray. I do. Like, this is why I don't buy the family excuse. So, again, first he says family, and then he says, well, he's the GOAT. Oh, so it's his greatness that allows him to do it. So, so if you want to use the service time thing or the length of career, fine. Yeah, he's been around. Absolutely. He's given up a hell of a lot more than Devin McCourty has, for example. Fine. Not that McCourty's given up zero. Drew Brees has been in the league every bit as long as Brady. He was OTAs.
So people have made this point that when you look across the NFL and you see the guys who are missing OTAs, it's like David Beckham, it's Le'Veon Bell.
Odell Beckham, you mean?
Odell Beckham. What did I say?
David.
Jesus.
Speaking of looking up wives.
Odell Beckham, Le'Veon Bell, Sam Donald.
Darnold. No, Aaron Darnold.
Aaron Donald. Yes,
you're confusing the quarterback.
Thank you. Right. The defensive lineman out there in L.A. And if you're watching the NBC Sports Boston simulcast, we do have exclusive footage of Jim Murray in Brady's LeMay outfit that he wore to the Met Gala with G on his arm and what it would look like. Because
that nice Versace jacket that Brady had on.
Murray belongs in that Versace jacket. But anyway, Odell Beckham, Le'Veon Bell, Donald, etc.
Yeah.
All the guys who are missing are doing it for contracts.
Yeah, did you say Julio Jones too?
Julio Jones is another one.
Yeah.
Every guy that's missing these this week is doing it on a contract issue. And Brady's the one guy that's not? Like, so he's the one guy that's not? So it's about money for every single one of these guys who are out this week. Except it's not for Brady. It's for family? Or his wife's hot? Or what? Like, you know, maybe we need to put a little more stock into what it's usually about, which is the money.
Yeah, to me, it's not about the family. That's a complete lie. Like, you plan your life around that. You know when the OTAs are. In the past, that's what he does.
And a And again, he's been working with Alex this week, whether it's in Gillette, in Foxborough, or at home. And, you know, there's still rumblings that Brady may have been there this week. You know, was he doing it exactly during the practice time that the Patriots were practicing? Maybe not. Was he there both days? Maybe not. But there was still Brady Guerrero time this week, wherever it was, and it might have been in Foxborough for at least a little bit. So he's got the time to do that.
Oh, he totally does.
He doesn't have the time to practice with his teammates?
Yeah, he's sticking it to him. Totally sticking it to him. And Drew Brees' wife, by the way, is kind of your standard cute blonde. Hold on, I got to Google Victoria Beckham.
Okay, here, while Maz is doing that, Murray gives you a 90-second update, no commercials, and we come back with your thoughts.